welcome to MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 662. I'm one of your hosts, Sky Vergoing. Joining me, as ever, is Jim McDowell. Jim, how's it going, man?
It's good to be back from vacation. Tiring, because vacation wears one out. And then we've had, crazy work weeks the past 2 weeks for us. I know you have. I know I have. But let's just talk some racing and, get on to the next race, because they're coming fast and furious.
Yeah, for those of you, apologies for being pretty late with the show this week. Like Jim mentioned, we have just been, he's been on vacation, then we got back to the work. I've been working, these 14-hour days, so really podcasting just didn't make its way under the schedule. So apologize for a little bit late, but at least we got it. We're going to get it in before the next race shows up on the calendar, so that's good. And a show wouldn't be a show without a little bit of tradition.
Ooh,
I'm gonna pop
that
out of that one
good.
Today. Yeah, this is actually a beer that a buddy brought over not so long ago. It's another hazy IPA, because he knows that's what I'm about. But it's called Moontime, and this is from Morgan Territory Brewing, and it's really good.
Smooth, is it?
Oh yeah, it's a nice, it's a crisp one. So some are a little more, what would I say? They're heavier, right? Put you to sleep, kind of hazy. And this is a much more crisp, like you would take this to a picnic or something, or enjoy it on the beach kind of beer.
Gotcha. So what's the alcohol content?
This is a little bit lower. It's 6.9. So not the big beast that I'm usually
drinking
at the
8.9.
Okay, so 35,
40 minutes in, guys. Keep your stopwatches going. Skyler's opinions will start to vary.
Yeah, we'll see if I can even talk. I've had these back-to-back calls here for like the last 2 days where I've been talking for about 6 hours straight a day. So I don't know if I'm going to be able to speak correctly today without stumbling over myself. It already kind of sounds like I am, so we'll see how this goes. In that case, don't worry, it's not the beer. It really is just me. All right, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, we got some stuff to cover on this one here. We got the latest news. We got the MotoGP round from Barcelona, but we did get some feedback this week.
That we did. So let's see here. Our good friend Keith Kovac writes in, says, "Hi, guys. Have a question for you in regards to Mark. Can Mark's results be more of a development issue with the bike rather than the physical one?" And didn't we cover this one?
I think we did cover this one. Keith had another one I think we meant to grab. So shuffle it up here. And there we
go. Thought that one was familiar, but we're all good.
Yep.
Anyway, Keith K writes in again. He says, "I was listening to another podcast." How dare you cheat on us, Keith? Anyway, another podcast. No. I love listening to other podcasts too, because there's always a different opinion and people see things different ways. So,
yeah, and
love
I don't
the fact
want to hear myself.
Exactly. I don't listen to myself. I was listening to another podcast and a question came up on the show that I thought was interesting and wanted to hear your opinion. The question is, who from MotoGP can go to World Superbike and beat Jonathan Rea? I have heard this question proposed. Who from World Superbike can win in MotoGP, but I rarely hear this the other way around. What say you guys? The 2021 Kawasaki looks really good this year. All right, so here's my take on this one, Keith. And I apologize for not getting back to you. I had very shoddy internet service where I was on vacation, so I couldn't put a thought together, but you get this now. First assumption I'm going to make is that whoever we pick out of MotoGP would ride for their factory in World Superbike. So I'm going to say Mark Marquez, when healthy. That's a caveat there. He put him on a Fireblade. I guarantee he'd run with Johnny Rea. Would he beat him? That Kawasaki is really good. Johnny's at home on it, but I think Mark is the better talent, so I think he would win. I would take Miller out of the Ducati, put him on a Panigale instead of a Desmo De Sici. And I think he could, on his day at the right track, he would beat Johnny Rea. And lastly, I believe that if you had Quartararo on one of the Yamahas, again, on his day, Quartararo would be able to beat Johnny Rea. Now, the second caveat to the question is, well, okay, what if they were Johnny Rea's teammate on a Kawasaki? Well, I think that opens up a bigger group of people, but the same people would still be at play. Still Marquez, still Quartararo, still Miller, but I would then add into that list, because we're going to be on a Kawasaki, I would add Oliveira, I would add Binder, and then I would add probably Ben Yaya in there as well. Skyler, who do you think?
I think there's at least five or six. We've seen Johnny show up before, some time ago when he was on the Honda. So you have to think how long ago that was before he was even on a Kawasaki. He got in, and I think he made got around about a top six or something like that, if my memory serves me correctly.
Understrict orders not to crash that bike at Aragon.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, that's Johnny's first time sitting on that bike. So given that, it's kind of – this is a tough question because Johnny's gotten a lot better. Obviously, we've seen him, you know, gel with that bike, and beating him on that bike on tracks he knows now will be difficult. But I definitely would say that Mark Marquez, we've seen him do amazing things. And when he's at his peak, I'm not sure anybody can necessarily beat that guy. I would definitely throw in Miller as well. He's looks to be a very adaptable rider and can ride around issues and just loves to send it. And I think superbikes love to be sent a little bit more than MotoGP bikes that run right on the edge. Superbikes, you kind of slide around and have some fun. I think that'd be right up Jack's alley. Quattro, again, would be another one. I think given that his outright corner speed and the fact that his trajectory with his skills is skyrocketing right now, that he'd be one for threat.
Matt and Quattro has figured out how to ride on a squishy front tire.
This is true. I think guys like Mir, who just have that knack for it. It's tough. I mean, I think it would kind of go into the same thing that you see week in and week out with MotoGP. It depends on the track, where it suits everybody, you know, your skill set. But I think the short answer for me, it'd be less than half the field could be Johnny Ray if I want an easy way out of it.
Ouch. That says a lot about what you think about the World Superbike paddock.
What do you mean?
Well, if half the field of MotoGP could beat Johnny Ray, mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Well, I mean, we did send Scott Redding over there recently, and he's had, you know, trouble in that game. Scott Redding wasn't very high in the GP racing, right? Very, you know, kind of middle to mid-back on the bike that he was on, and he's been hassling Johnny since he's been over there. And we've seen guys, you know, step down into GP years later, run really good. Bautista was another one. So this isn't necessarily the cream of the crop, the GP that's gone over there, and yet they've hassled people at the front, right?
Yeah,
so
true.
I think you just have such, and I don't think it's a knock against World Superbike. Actually, I think it's just the depth that we have in MotoGP right now is absolutely insane. We see it with how many guys are winning races now. You know, you go back 7 years, this wasn't, there was three guys that were winning week in and week out. I mean, mm-hmm. We're talking, you know, we could have a whole host of winners in different bikes. So I think it speaks more to MotoGP than it does to World Superbike.
I think you're right. Fair statement. All right, let's move on to the second part of feedback. This one comes from Michael McDonald. He says, gentlemen, I enjoy your proposed changes to Moto3 qualifying. See, somebody's listening to us, Skyler, when we talk about qualifying and how to fix it. People are listening. Just happens to be our own fans. I completely agree that the thought of a timed single-lap super pole is absurdly boring. Agree. Mm-hmm. My proposal would be a pair of semi-final sprint races replacing the Q1, Q2 format. We maintain the current F1 or free practice 1 through free practice 3 format. The results of those three sessions leads to seeding of all 32 racers, same as present. We then take those results to create the grid for the two semifinal races on Saturday afternoon, replacing the Q1, Q2 sessions. The races are seeded accordingly, race 1, 1, 4, 5, 8, 9, 12, 13, etc. Race 2 is 2, 3, 6, 7, 10, 11, etc. Each semi is 8 to 10 lap sprint. The winner of the fastest overall race earns pole. Winner of the slower race gets the middle front row. Second fastest in race 1 race is second. In fastest race is outside row 1. Second in the slower race gets inside row 2, so on and so on. By making these 8 to 10 lap sprints, elapsed time for both races would equal the current Q1, Q2 format, maintaining the same schedule. We as fans get competition racing on Saturday. Teams and racers get more experience in competitive racing. It's important for a field of mostly inexperienced teams. Most importantly, we avoid the lingering in the paddock during each 15-minute session. It's my contributory 2 cents worth. Take it for what it's worth. Thanks for the pod. Mike, thanks for writing in. Him and I had a couple back and forth in email on this one. I thoroughly enjoyed writing and communicating with Michael. But credit where credit is due. I think Michael has hit upon probably what is the best solution for fixing what's going on in Moto3. There's a lot of positives here. we get the guys some race time in a smaller pack of riders as opposed to the 18 that were going nine wide into Barcelona this weekend or any place where we've got the long straightaway. He's right. We avoid having the sitting around in a paddock. The more seat time you have in a race condition, the better it is. As I said to him, you know, the effects of the draft and what happens in the draft is an amazing phenomenon. And you do, nothing can compare you for what really happens in the draft until you are in it, that experience. I remember the first time I ever got to race on a mile dirt. It's the first time you get to play with the draft. You know, they had the experienced guys came up and gave a little speech. Never forget Steve Moritz saying, hey, this is what it's like. And it's not even, you know, it as good as he was at explaining to us, it's still something you have to experience. And the more experience you get with it, the easier it is to figure out like where people are, where people aren't going to be. And yes, these guys have been racing and experiencing a draft, and I get that. But we're talking about being at a very, very high level here, not the CEV. Not to say that the CEV isn't a high level of racing, but it's not world championship racing. So again, these guys need the experience, as you said. There's teams. Now, I thought that, you know, what are we going to do about the tires? Are we going to score points for this? You know, because nobody wants to run a race without getting some kind of points or getting something out of it. But you know, as Michael Tolt said, he was like, look, it's going to be the same amount of time, so that's not a big deal. We're not going to add any points to it because this is qualifying, and he's right about that. And you know, hey, you're only using up the same tires that you would use up if you were in qualifying. So I think it's kind of a wash, but it was just some of the first things that came to my mind with it. What I really think we should do with this, if it was to be done, is we should have, like, say, the race one happen at the normal Q1 qualifying time. Then we should go to MotoGP free practice 4, then give them a break of about 15 minutes for the Moto 3 second qualifying race, then go to MotoGP qualifying, which I think would be a better flow, because you know you have some racing, a little practice, a little racing. I think that would kind of not break it up, because you go QP4 for MotoGP, then right into the qualifying session with a break. I think there'd be some track time there. I think the schedule would work a little better that way. So all credit where credit is due. Fantastic idea, Michael. Hopefully they institute something like that, because I think it'd be great. Skyler, you got any thoughts on this?
Obviously, this is probably one of the most well thought out.
Yeah, it is. It's really well thought out.
The only thing that I think I would worry from all of this is overcomplicating the process for the fans to understand why someone who raced in race one and finished second winds up in third, you know, on the grid, because from race two, there was another time that was faster, right? Somebody, you know, won that race. That's, you know, the question is, if there is such a thing, is when there's too much is too much. Sometimes less is more, right? When you're, mm-hmm. if you're getting four races a weekend, you know, five races a weekend, how much attention are you going to be actually gathering from people? And kind of the great thing about Saturday qualifying is if you can kind of catch it, you can, but I don't think a lot of people can sit down for all of qualifying and all of racing most weekends, right? Especially when live, when it's, you know, hours and hours and hours. So you do run the risk of, you know, having these races and having incidents in each race and then slowing that down. So it is tricky, but I think it'd be worth trying something like this out just to see, because obviously what we're doing right now isn't necessarily working well. But that'd be my only concern. Other than that, it has a ton of great upside to this idea, and it'd be interesting to see something similar get put in.
I completely agree with you. It's like an old school dirt track Saturday night dash for cash. It's super cool. I love the idea. Yeah. So
all right, well, thanks everyone for writing in. Remember, folks, if you want to write into us, you can reach us at motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all of the hosts, and most likely we'll be reaching you back out in the email. But if you find it's going to be a good topic to bring onto the show and discuss, we will do so, like you saw here from Keith and Michael. So again, thank you both, gentlemen. And thank you to all the fine folks that have recently donated to the show, either through Patreon or PayPal. Remember, folks, if you want to donate to the show, you can do so by going to motopodcast.com. On the left-hand side there, you can go ahead and click on the button to either donate or go through a monthly subscription. Whichever way you do, it does help with the show. Keeps everything going here. And we also have Patreon. That's patreon.com/motopod if you have Patreon is your thing. All right, Jim, we've got some news this week. Why don't you go ahead and take it off?
So the first bit of news that I found, I think this is really exciting, is that the 2022 Isle of Man TT races will be streamed live, and that's courtesy of Road Racing World. I think that's brilliant. It's about time that they did it, especially for us here in the U.S. I would much rather sit down at my computer, grab the live stream of it. Even if I had to pay a few pounds for it, I would love to be able to watch it live as it happens. I think it could be brilliant if they did the stream in a way sort of like how Dorna has done MotoGP, where you can pick different cameras and kind of set them up and have, you know, three screens. I usually watch it from three screens. I got two onboards. I have one commentary, kind of the commentary, what everybody sees. I think that'd be brilliant. Instead of having, you know, usually it's like the whole racing is already done. I already know who wins. And then it shows up over here on some obscure cable channel in the US. So I think that is absolutely brilliant. Let's see. Second thing of news here. The fans are now back in the stands. We had how many, Skyler? 24,000 or something at Barcelona?
Something like that.
For the race.
Something like that.
Aston's going to have like 5,000. And then the Red Bull Ring is going to be full capacity. No restrictions on people coming in there. Like the writer said when they got here, they didn't realize how much you miss something until you see it back again. And I think a lot of us have missed the crowd there. I despise pictures of empty grandstands because I know there should be people there watching this happen live and enjoying themselves. And I love the shots of the families and the little kids that are there and their expressions when they hear one of the bikes go by, and then when they see, you know, like their hero, and they're all dressed in Marc Marquez or Rossi gear or Ducati gear or whatever it is. I think it's the coolest thing in the world. So I was glad to see it back too.
Definitely is. It's been missing. And for those of you who've been watching the Euro Cup, we've been actually able to see fans back with just in soccer. And that's been a huge difference between watching all of these silent games last year and actually hearing fans again. It's like, oh, this is all part of it, right? You got to hear it all. It's all, you're hearing the songs. And in motorcycle racing, you're hearing all the air horns and you're seeing the smoke bombs go off and everyone's going crazy. And then you know someone's gone down, not because you heard them sliding down the camera, because you heard the crowd just lose their mind. They're like, what's going on in the background? And it's like, oh, there's been a pass or someone's crashed. So it definitely adds into the whole audience of the entire weekend.
Yeah. Agreed. So glad. I mean, I'd also, I think it's a sign that says we are nearing the end of this pandemic. We're not out of the wood. We've maybe got over the hump here.
Hey, we definitely opened up today, actually. Ironically enough that you mentioned that, California, June 15th, everything's pretty much open again, and they've pulled a lot of mask restrictions off of places. I have a company party next week with no masks required to be outside. How weird is that?
Yeah, it's, hopefully it becomes the new normal for everybody everywhere soon. So fingers crossed that we're on the good side of this one now and not on the bad side of it. The last bit of news before we talk about the race is Maverick Vinales has changed crew chiefs yet again. He is now on his third MotoGP crew chief. So he went, or at least at Yamaha. So he initially started with Roman Fakata, then he went to Esteban Garcia, and now he's partnered with Silvano. Is it Galzabura? How do you say that one? My Spanish is terrible because I never took anything.
Well, I think he's Italian, but it's Gabrosera. I think so, yeah.
Yeah. Because that was Rossi's former crew chief.
Well, yeah, and he was in the World Superbike paddock for a long time. I remember he was back.
Then Rossi picked him out to replace Burgess.
Yeah, when Ben Spies was back in the World Superbike paddock, I remember he was over there on that team, along with Marigala was over there too. So yeah, a lot of those guys have made their way in over to the factory team these days.
Yep. So this says a lot about what's going on inside of Vinales's mind. He can't figure it out, so he's just going to throw something else at it to see if that's going to change. And
him losing Ramon Forcada, because he went over to run the Petronas effort, I believe, and so. Mm-hmm.
Him They've losing, done really
that,
well.
Yeah, I think that's where he's really feeling it. That wasn't necessarily his choice that he wanted Ramon to leave. Ramon wanted a new challenger. He wanted to go spearhead that operation. So,
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, this shows that the crew chief and rider are like a marriage, and you've got to understand each other. And apparently, whatever Vinales is saying is not getting communicated properly, or is falling on deaf ears, and he wants to change. He wants to try to figure out what's wrong. And the only way that he can really figure out to do that is to look for something else. This problem is not who is turning the wrenches or deciding which way to make an adjustment on suspension or whatever it is on the bike. This kid's problem is what's between his ears. And, you know, we found out that he's a dad now, and that's cool. And I can see where, like, your mind's not going to be really technically focused if your wife slash partner is having a child. You know, you know, Skylar, I have kids too. You are deeply concerned for that time frame because there's so many things that can happen, and you want to be sure that everybody's going to be healthy and happy and everything. And then they're here, and then they are happy, and everybody's healthy, and everything's cool. And I expected like a little uptick in him, but you know, racers are completely different than everybody else. But I still think the main problem with Maverick Vinales on that motorcycle is what's between his ears, and that's his own brain. So,
been too many years of it. And I think, honestly, yeah. I think the best change for him would be to get on a different bike, honestly. Like, a complete change. Or go back to something that was familiar, you know, go back to Suzuki. I mean, you know, if Renz decided, you know, well, honestly, if Vinales was up on the market and, you know, I was Suzuki and I was like, oh, I can keep Renz, I can bring Vinales back, I would very much consider bringing Vinales back because Renz, man. We'll talk about it in the race.
We'll get to that later, but, right? Well, with that, we want to just kind of move into Moto GP for the weekend, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, so let's see, trying to get us to where we need to be here. Rolling, scrolling. The qualifying, just quickly, Fabio Quartararo was basically perfect all weekend. That kid was fast, and it didn't matter when. But some just interesting side notes. Miller was into the first QP session for the first time this year. Again, as you've said, Skylar, everybody's going to spend time in that first qualifying session this year, and you are so right with that. Probably the best prediction of the year so far. But Miller and Mark Marquez were having a little game about like how much money it was going to cost Marquez for the toe, and that was kind of cute. That got shown everywhere, which I like that attitude out of Miller about what was going to happen versus the attitude of what Vinales had the week prior in Mugello. Mm-hmm. And again, that's the difference between someone who is mentally strong and someone who is on the edge, not of a mental breakdown, but is.
Yeah. Not, well, I mean, let's be real.
I don't know how to say it.
You're not going to win a mind game against an Aussie. Good luck to that. You're not going to do that.
Right.
So Miller don't give a right. His whole thing is like, you think you can get a toe? Fine. Keep up then. See if you can handle it. He's coming from that approach.
Mentality too, right? Yeah. He'd go out and just throw down a lap that was stonking and be like, chase it, boys. Mm-hmm. So, but Quartararo was on the front row. Miller came through to actually finish second for qualifying, followed by Zarco, Oliveira on the KTM, Morbidelli, Vinales, Espargaro, Brad Binder, Benyaya, and Mir finished the top 10. Rossi was there in 11th and 12th with Paul Espargaro. So the Hondas were not having a good day whatsoever. When we moved into, as we moved into the MotoGP race, it started out, Oliveira got a great hole shot and was leading, and you're just kind of like, okay, Quartararo is going to settle himself in here. He's going to work his way to the front. This kid somehow gels with Barcelona. He did it on that speed up in Moto 2. He's won here before in Moto GP. This is kind of like his track. And it took some little bit of time. Quartararo just kind of rolled up to the front, kind of went ahead of Oliveira, and pretty much kind of sat there for a little bit. And I thought he was really going to run away with it, is kind of where I thought it was going to go. It didn't really. I mean, mm-mm. Oliveira kind of like, you know, had a little bit of a break. He had about a half a second or so. And, you know, it was still time there. And then we had Marquez go down, which was like 3 DNFs on the trot for him. That was a terrible time for him down there. But then, like I said, Quartararo kind of got himself together. He closed in on Oliveira. He made a move on him and went to the front. Aleix fell off at turn 10. But it was like no sooner than Quartararo had got to the front, Oliveira kind of went right back by him again. And I was like, I was stunned. Like at that moment, I was stunned because I didn't see that coming. And I was thinking, okay, there's got to be something wrong with Quartararo's bike. He's either got a tire problem, because we've seen before with him that he kind of, I don't wanna, there's no bad tire that Michelin makes, but they are handmade, so they may not be all exactly the same. There's a potential for them to spin on the rim. Sometimes they go out of balance and you get a vibration and you don't like that feel. So I thought maybe that was something that was going on there, but it really wasn't that. And Quartararo had nothing for Oliveira at all. Now, Zarco was kind of riding up from the back of the pack. He started to pick people off as he went along. He had some help with the falls that happened in front of him. But basically, he was right there. He finally got by Mir using the Ducati power on the straightaway. And then we have the most weirdest thing I think I've seen happen in a MotoGP race ever. And that is Quartararo's leathers unzip. I'm flabbergasted by that. We saw him actually fiddling with it. He pulled his chest protector out and threw it out of it to try to zip his leathers back up again. He wasn't actually able to do that. And Oliveira wins the race with Quartararo. Well, I guess I should back up a little bit. While this is happening, Quartararo had a run at Oliveira going in the first turn. He lost the front a little bit, ran off through the 1-2, kind of took the shortcut through turns 1 and 2. He came up with a 3-second penalty, which is going to drop him back to basically like the podium position. And then, you know, which he was going to get that penalty because that was the standard penalty for anybody who did it in Moto 2 or Moto 3. But then we found after that he wound up getting another 3-second penalty for not having his leathers zipped. So we'll get to the whole leather gate thing here, but the race finishes after all the penalties with Oliveira winning. That was a masterclass ride by Oliveira. He put his head down, showed everybody what he could do, rode with pressure from behind the whole time, didn't let Quartararo by, but reacted to the fact that Quartararo had come by and still won it. It was absolutely great showing that the KTM guys have found a way in these first four races, where we are, to build another chassis to fix what is the problem with the bike, which is the idea behind having a steel chassis. They're easy to change, easy to modify, easy to weld back up again and make another one versus aluminum, which is a lot more difficult. But Zarco finishes second because of the penalties. Then Miller, Mir, Vinales, Quartararo, Bagnaia, Binder, Morbidelli, Bastianini, Alex Marquez, Marini, Nakagami, Martin, and then Salvadori. So we need to go back to the Quartararo thing. Now, Casey Stoner tweeted out that he should have been black flagged because that's a safety equipment thing. You have to ride with a helmet. You have to ride with gloves. We saw that with, I can't think of who it was, but it was at Austria. Somebody didn't have gloves on. Oh, it was the Moto3 guy. Well, who was it? Was it Della Porta?
I
can't remember.
No, not a chance. Not a chance remembering that one.
But remember he had the bike and the oil was all down. It was one of the Hondas. It was one of the lay-apart Hondas. And he rode back without gloves. Well, that was a penalty for not riding back. So with not having your safety equipment on. So Stoner's like, hey, this should have been black flagged. You should have been brought in. And then they didn't do anything about it. They handed out the penalty for cutting turns 1 and 2. Fine. But then Ducati and Suzuki go to race direction after the race. And like, hello, the rule book says that you have to have this equipment on and you don't have the equipment on. So therefore you need to be penalized. And then the race stewards come back and they're like, well, okay, we're going to add another 3 seconds to Quartararo's time. Quartararo was kind of peeved by it. He says, well, hey, the first penalty knocked me out of the contention of the podium. And that was penalty enough. I didn't need another penalty on top of it. Well, I disagree. I think he should have been penalized. I think he should have been black flagged, as everybody else has said. To me, I do not understand how his leathers became unzipped. Now, in my racing career, I did not have a brand new Alpenstars factory suit. I had some AGV suits. I've had Bill's leathers. I've had Lou's leathers. I had D's leathers when I was racing. And they were, you know, they would cost us at the time back in the 90s, it was, you know, I was like a $350, $400 suit custom made. And I never had a problem with a zipper, ever. Never. And when Alpenstars looked at Quartararo's suit, they couldn't come up with a reason for it to be unzipped. It was working and properly functioning. So the mystery remains as to what's really going on. We're never going to know what really happened. I don't know what happened. I'm, you know, my only thought was it was fairly hot at Barcelona. I don't know if Quartararo tried to unzip it a little bit to get some more air, or if it was just one of those fluky things that happened in life. But I still think he should have been black flagged. Your thoughts on Leathergate, you know, or Zippergate, I guess.
At first, you know what I thought would happen? I thought because he almost lost it in turn one, I thought his airbag had gone off and that popped the zipper loose. And that's why it got loose and he was chucking the chest pad out. But then I was reading, he was saying that the chest pad was bothering him and he was trying to adjust that. And that's how it like got unzipped, because he was messing around with his chest and pulling on the pad, and he caught the zipper with his hand, and it started to loosen up. And once it got a little bit loose, the air got in and just kind of pulled the rest of it open, right? Pulled it down past the belly button, and then he couldn't, for the life of him, you know, get that
grip
at speed. So that seems like it could kind of happen if you're fidgeting around with your chest plate there. And so maybe it's time to not slip it in loose anymore. Maybe it's time to get one of those ones that are held in already. But I agree. You should have been black flag. You can't ride around with open leathers. I mean, if you were to take a spill at top speed and your leathers are open like that, I mean, you're really going to hurt yourself, man.
Yeah. And how could the airbag deploy properly?
Right. Or just anything. It just doesn't work. And, you know, this is what we've gone and talked about before with protecting riders from themselves. This just showed us riders don't make the greatest decisions, right? They're trying to win at any cost. So sometimes you got to be like, no, dude, like, I understand you wanted to win, but this is super dangerous. And we don't want to set a precedent for this. So, yeah, I think the black flag, I think they need to relook that. And if that happens again when their equipment fails, I mean, you're not going to let a guy ride around without a helmet if it comes off, right? Same thing.
Right. Yeah. I completely agree with you. I mean, you know, we were talking about the Isle of Man in the news section. It's like, that's one of the things that I always cringe about is when they come into the pits and they change visors. Because it's like, I cringe because I don't want the visor to come off.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like, I mean, I know when I would change out the ones in my Arai and everything, I couldn't tell you the number of times that I would make it go up and down, up and down, up and down, mm-hmm. to prove that it would work.
And not properly. All systems are created equal. I've had, you know, the big three brands. I've had a Shoei, I've had a Arai, and I've had a Swami. And the Shoei was super simple because you could see the tabs, you could lock it in. But then you had the plates on the Arai and the Swami that you had to get behind as well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't get those plates on, they'll snap off. And then it isn't secure again. So, yeah, that's always super sketchy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you agreed that this is one of those things where I think race direction kind of turned a blind eye at a time when they really shouldn't have. And, I mean, oh,
if
good God.
If this was a guy in 15th place, would he have had the same – would have been in the same thing, or would they black flag that guy? You know what I mean?
You know, that's a good question. Well, I give you this question. We're talking about using 2 inches of green paint at Mugello and saying, oh, you violated track limits. You get a penalty. And, oh, yeah, by the way, the guy behind you did. So, well, it doesn't really matter. You go back to the way that you were, because one penalty cancels another penalty. Mm-hmm. If you're going to go to that level about track limits, then you damn well better go that way to a safety issue. You know what I'm saying?
I can't disagree.
I mean, then it's lunacy. It's one of those things where it's like it'll drive you mad, because you want this great racing, which we have, and yet we have a set of rules that are very black and white about what you should and shouldn't be
doing. You know what this reminds me of? It's like if a country spent millions of hours and dollars and education developing a law system, and then they had the common man decide your fate by trying to interpret those laws. That sounds familiar. Where have I heard that before? It's weird.
Yeah.
That dummy over there is going to decide whether or not that these laws that are very complicated and true, that guy is going to be the one because this guy told a better story how those laws to be interpreted. Right. Oh, he's my peer. I've never seen that guy before. Anyway, political podcast, folks. Anyhow, Yeah. So.
Okay. Yeah, that beer hit you harder than what I thought. I'm sorry, folks. I'm off on my time frame with that one. Oh, ouch, man! All the way around.
All right. So that.
I think we've belittled this point enough. Hey, yes. Look, there's a set of rules. You guys didn't follow the rules. And you kind of are twisting it to be what you want it to be. Mm-hmm. And you kind of got called out by it by mm-hmm. two other factories because you had to do something at that point. So you gave him another one, which has been good for the point standings because now Quattro is on 115 points with Zarco now at 101. So that puts him 14 behind him. Miller's on 90 points. Benyaya's there at 88. Mir's on 78. Vinales on 75, Oliveira at 54 with that win, Spargaro on 44, that's Aleix, and then Binder on 43, and Morbidelli still in the top 10 with 40 points. I think that this is, would you agree that this is like really like a, becoming a two-man race between Quartararo and Zarco?
No, I don't.
You don't think so?
I think it's so early, and honestly, that point gap, right? I mean, if Quartararo were to crash out the next race, and Vinales mm-hmm. were to win, he'd be 10 mm-hmm. points behind.
Yep.
Or 15 points behind. And that's nothing. So I think there's not enough gaps. I mean, we've seen what can happen on a streak. We can see what happened at the end of last year.
Reed's breaking his wrist, yeah.
Yeah, I think even Oliveira, I mean, if he gets another good result, look how much he uh-huh. shot up already, right? He almost like 40% gain on his disadvantage. So mm-hmm. we got a long season ahead of us of unpredictability. And even though Quattro has shown dominance in qualifying and has definitely been the fastest guy this year, how many times has something happened on the Sunday that it's just been gone? I mean, he should have three in a row right now. There was an arm pump issue, and then he won one, and now there's been the zipper thing. But he's dominated practice sessions, and he's dominated qualifying, and he's looked like the fastest guy. Oh, and there was weather in Le Mans, too. So,
yeah.
Any of those variables. Now, if he gets Quattro races every weekend, then sure, he's going to pull it away. But even Zarco, I mean, he had races where he runs to the front, then he's races he mid-pack. So, man, I have no idea how it's going to go.
See, I'm very interested to see what happens. The next couple of races here, I find to be a very interesting stretch. You go to Sachsenring. So now we're going counterclockwise. Marquez talked about how for at least the 7 laps that he was in the race, he felt like the old Marquez. He was aggressive, making moves, and he was going forward. Put him on a left-handed track. He doesn't have to use his right shoulder as much. Going to be interesting. I'm really interested to see how good Oliveira goes with the KTM at that tight and twisty place. Because if he goes really well there, KTM might have solved their handling and tire issue with a frame. So that puts him in a driver's seat. You go into Assen, and then you're going to the two races back-to-back weekends at the Red Bull Ring. I mean, that's going to be like a KTM. We know KTM's faster. They won before. Oliveira won there, you know, the last time we were there. So the Ducatis are fast there. So the Yamahas haven't had a really good time at that track. You're right. It is way too early. But these next races are fascinating races to see how this championship is basically going to play out.
Indeed. All right, let's get on to some Moto 2.
Yeah. Okay, so let's look at the Moto 2 from the qualifying and how that went down. Gardner took another pole. It was another great weekend for Remy in that respect. His teammate was right there with him. Then Bo Ben Schneider, Augusto Fernandez, DG Antonio was fifth, Vierge Ayagura, Lowe's was eighth. What's really happening to Sam Lowe's? I mean, I got to ask that question. This guy was flying fast. I mean, I don't think he's riding hurt. At least I don't know that he's riding hurt, but Sam isn't Sam anymore.
He's in a bad position right now, right? The confidence had to have taken a hit. Those crashes in a row. So now he's got to play it safe. Safe ain't going to win. So
right.
he's in a tough spot right now.
Yep. So that was basically the qualifying that we had. You know, Joe Roberts qualified well down in 17th. And again, Cam did not make it to the second session. When we get into the race in the Moto 2, you know, this one is, I hate to say it, but this one's kind of a snoozer, to be honest, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, Remy gets out front. He gets out there. You know, he's out there with his teammate and Bo Ben Schneider, Vierge. actually had a very good race. Shout out to Chavi Verhe. Lowe's was 12th, Roberts was 17th. They really, you know, nothing happens from like the beginning of the race till, you know, like lap 15 when Raul starts to kind of get closer to Gardner, but he's not that close. He's keeping him honest, and you're just thinking, okay, well, is it going to be a tire thing or whatever? Then Lowe's was very far down in the list. He was behind Iagura, which would be about eighth place or so. But then he looked like he was starting to find some pace. He was starting to put some laps together. Again, you're talking about confidence, Skyler. Maybe this guy's was starting to put something together, trying to have a little bit of confidence. Started to come up with some pace. Bowman Schneider loses it. He falls off. You know, he didn't fall off. He lost the duct off of his helmet, or the little arrow fin that's on the back of some of the helmets. Apparently the wind caught it wrong or got bumped or something, and it came off. But then Raul Fernandez takes on Gardner at turn one, gets by. And I'm thinking, okay, was Raul saving some tire? What was going on there? It was kind of interesting because once Raul got by, he was definitely motioning for Gardner to stay with him. And thinking that, hey, look, I got a little more pace. Maybe we can just get away from everybody. If you stay with me and don't fight me, we're going to go faster. When Remy did. Remy kind of laid back. He stayed there for a long time. Chavi Verhe, again, good race. He got past Bowman Schneider. Bezecchi got past Bowman Schneider. So Bowman Schneider was starting to fall off. Again, you get towards the end of that race, and his tires seem to be affected more than anybody else. But, you know, we got down to about three or – we had track limits. Del Porta falls, sorry. Roberts had made it up to 15th, and then Raul gets a track limits warning. So now he's got to watch what he's doing. He can't run wide anymore. Gardner, with three laps to go, gets back past Fernandez. And then Iagura throws it away. But as the race finishes off, Gardner wins it. I mean, Gardner ran a fantastic race. Calculate it. Got out front, did what he had to do, saw that Rollo was faster, let him by in all honesty, followed him, found out where he was weak, fast, zapped him at the end, saved a little bit of tire. Brilliant ride. So Fernandez finishes second on the podium. Io looking brilliant because they got two guys on the box. Bezecchi gets third. Lowe's had a fourth, which he'd come through because of the Aguirre incident. He kind of got there. It was a good ride. Hopefully this adds some confidence to Sam. And he puts him back into where he's back at the front. And he needs to do something pretty fast because this championship is starting to slide away from him. Of course, anything can happen. But then Joe Roberts was sixth, which is a good recovery ride for the American. Then it's Marcel Schroeder, Chavi Verhey.
Never mind. Sorry.
I thought you were reading the championship.
Yeah, that's what
championship.
I was like, wait a minute, hold on.
I screwed up. My fault.
Wait.
You get me in vacation mode, and look what happens to me. Yeah. So it was Gardner Fernandez, it was Verhey, Bezecchi, Augusto Fernandez, Bowman Schneider. Lowe's was seventh, so he at least finished, right? Lowe's has had a problem not finishing at all, so now he's finished, which is good. And then you had Schroeder, Chantra. Roberts had a top 10. Navarro, Arenas, Arbolino, Celestino Vietti, and then Luthi in the top 15 scoring points. The championship is Gardner on 139, Fernandez on 128, Bezecchi's on 101, Lowe's is on 75. Still early days, but it looks like it's going to be between the IO twins for who's the champion
this Bezecchi, year. Bezecchi, yeah, just not quite where I thought he would be this year. I'm not quite sure. He's thereabouts, right? He's like, but that last step, something there, his overall top speed, not sure what it is, isn't there this year. Maybe we'll see it turn on late, but those three guys for sure have pulled away. And then the top two guys, I think, you know, we've seen week in and week out, they're a step above. So
that is true. The IO boys are definitely a cut above everybody else in the class so far. I mean, week in, week out, they are definitely the fastest guys there. And I mean, just looking at how Remy's riding on that Moto 2 bike, I can't wait to see him on the factory KTM in Moto GP. I think it's going to be fabulous.
He's had a good couple weeks, hasn't he? Win, Moto GP contract, win. That's how you do it.
Sure. Which, you know, I thought this was like a make or break. I think this is a make or break year. I've said it for Roberts. I mean, I still think he'll have a ride, you know, in Moto 2 next year, but I expected so much more with him at Italtrans. And it hasn't happened. It hasn't.
You got a gelled. That's a top five bike. We've seen it before.
Hell yeah, it is. It's a winning bike.
And you got to be there. And the consistency hasn't this season for Roberts. And he still has time to right the ship. But, man, he needs to get – excuse the pun. He needs to get on the gas real soon.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want him – I don't want Joe to not be in the MotoGP paddock in some capacity riding. But, man, he's not – what excuses does he have at this point, right? Because you know the quality of bike that he's on.
Yeah.
So,
well,
there's nowhere to hide. Pull your finger out, boy.
Yeah. Well, we shall see.
We shall see. So that's all of Moto 2, which leaves us with only what? Moto 3 to cover, which was another one of these races that was just wild and crazy, right? Moto 3 is.
Yeah.
Quickly. Gabriel Rodrigo was fast all through the practices. Everybody knew it. Everybody was waiting around for him to go out so that they could go out behind him and get a tow. We sat around this weekend sitting in the pits waiting to go out. Like, there was like 11 minutes left at one point. I mean, it's like, guys, you're wasting half of a session. You're not even going out. Again, this is why Michael McDonald, his idea of a sprint race is fabulous, just to stop this stuff from happening. But Rodrigo came through on pole, then Alcoba, Antonelli, Nepa. I think that's one of the best qualifyings that Nepa's had. Then it's Guevara. McPhee was sixth fastest, and the interesting thing about that was McPhee, for the entire time, set every one of his laps by himself. He did not want a tow, didn't try to get a tow. He was figuring it out on his own, which I think is how you really should go about qualifying. Go out there, put down the lap, and see where you stand. So he was going to start sixth. Then Bender, Suzuki, Masia, Rossi, and then Fanati, Anshu, who was way farther down than what I thought Anshu was going to be. Then Toba and Sasaki, Fernandez, Foggia, Slack, and Artigas qualifying. The race was basically one of those madcapped, crazy, wild Moto 3 races. And we are starting to see a lot of these when we have this long straightaway where it's all about the draft and who gets the timing right of when to be at the front, when to not be at the front, kind of a thing. But it was the big hitters that were out front from the start. Rodrigo, Antonelli, Alcoba, Nepa. Remember, Acosta was way back. He was like 22nd when he started because he did not make it out of the first round of qualifying. Bender had gone to the front. That was one of the biggest things that he had to do. He had to get it there. McPhee went to the front early on, and then things went downhill for McPhee because he wound up tossing it away once he got to the front. I honestly think that McPhee had pace to literally break away from everybody, and I think he was pushing so hard to get enough of a gap through the twistier section to be sure that he could break the draft from the other guys, that he just stepped over the bounds, right, and tossed it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a shame because I think that's what – I don't think McPhee scored a point this season, has he? I mean, he scored points at Le Mans, I think, finally.
Yeah, he did.
Did he crash? Yeah. But, I mean, how many races has he crashed out of? I mean, at least
– he's crashed out of more than he's finished.
Way more than – yeah, exactly.
And,
which is terrible.
I hate to bag on a guy when he's down, but I don't foresee a great Moto 3 future for McPhee. And at least in the reason I say that, he could still be in the paddock. He's not going to be on one of the top teams anymore. And when you're not on a top team, I mean, just really at the Moto 3, it's like you may just, you know, try to jump on into another series and maybe try to slide back on over to BSB. You've got, you know, good clout over there. Maybe jump on a superbike or, you know, super sport. I would go superbike if you really could.
Yeah,
I think Danny Kent's actually doing that these days, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't been able to keep up with BSB. I should start listening to Dave's podcast. I know he covers a lot of that, and I need to throw his sweet sultry voice back in my ears and listen to all that good motorcycle stuff he pumps up. But
Paddock Chatter,
there you go. Free plug, Dave. There you are. If you haven't listened, go listen. Dave does a great job. If you miss him from the show, he's got his old podcast over there, and he definitely focuses on the British series. And, man, he knew a lot about the BSB when he was here. Just imagine when he's focused on it primarily. Definitely a good listen.
Yeah, it's worth it. Well, the interesting thing was about McPhee's high side at turn two was the fact that the bike starts to slide back out onto the track. And how many of you, raise your hand, did you have a flashback of Austria? You know?
It's up.
And it almost happened because Mino went down as a result, because I think it was one of those things where I think it was like something that scares you out of your peripheral vision, because it's not where he's looking. The bike isn't coming across where he's looking, where his focus is, because he's looking to the apex. The bike hasn't gotten to the McPhee's bike hasn't gotten to that apex, but suddenly you see something out of the corner of your eye and you kind of flinch. Blat, he went down, and that was there. Somehow Acosta, Pedro, winds up sliding through all of this craziness to get himself up towards the front. And, you know, while all this is happening, not only does he sort of slide on by all the crashing and everything, he simply just zips right up to the lead. So, again, here's Pedro, 22, not 22 years old, but starts from the 22nd position. And, you know, we're talking about being maybe 11 laps in. He's at the front of the pack. And I thought, okay, he learned his lesson here from Mugello, right, with the long straightaway, that, hey, I don't need to be at the front. I got to sort of just kind of chill here in the back and get it timed out right to where I can be there. But no, the kid's a racer, so he's just going to go out there and lead. Oh, by the way, in the crash with Mino was Suzuki. Suzuki kind of was a victim of Mino's seeing McPhee's bike out of the corner of his eye. So he was down in there too. So a lot of action happened right at that little section and point of the race. Anju took a spot at the lead. Finati was there. We had track limits. Yeah, right. I should just say it that way. Who didn't? Because what were they? They were 9-10 wide going to turn one.
Yeah. There was a time where it was actually 8 wide coming into the corner. Yep. That's nuts.
Yeah. And the thing of it is that here they go again. They ride off into the pit lane and get really wide and try to come back together again. And here comes the rant, because I got to start watching Moto 3 with my hand over my eyes, because I'm waiting for a really bad one here. I think we all know that we have a problem here in Moto 3. These guys are all way too close, going way too fast, and they're just weaving all over the place. And I don't know how you stop it, but I think we've got to the point where the safety gear and everything that a rider has is really, really good. But one thing that it can't do is help you when you're hit by another motorcycle. And I am scared to death that at some point one of these guys is going to miss by that millimeter, and we're going to have essentially like when Sete Gibernau's front brake got onto the rear fender of another bike at the start several years ago at Barcelona and flipped the bike and literally ripped the front end off of his Ducati. We're going to have some massive crash like that. And when you have 12 or 13 Moto 3 bikes that are that close together, it is going to be carnage. And I just don't want to see it.
Was that Gibernau or Caprossi that happened to?
Gibernau.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
That was wild. Caprossi, I think, had retired
at that time.
Oh, okay. I remember just watching that bike just come flipping through. That was nuts.
Yep. It was crazy. I mean, can you imagine like 3 Moto 3 bikes doing that?
No.
I mean, the whole thought of it scares me. I mean, I think, you know, the Moto 3 race is usually the best race of the weekend, right?
Oh,
because
easily.
It's crazy manic. It's a bunch of kids with like no fear, and they do wild and crazy things. And I get it. I was wild and crazy. I did the same shit. So I'm not.
Maybe I'll
I'm
say
trying
this
not to harp on
it for everyone, because maybe some people don't enjoy that kind of thing. Well, I'll say it's the closest race of the weekend for the most part, right?
Sure.
Maybe other people like best racing because they want to see a one-on-one battle. They don't want to see calamity that's going on, and thinking maybe they think the draft makes a lot of false racing instead of, you know, overall rider. But I will definitely say it's the most exciting and the closest racing you'll get all weekend.
Right. Yeah, that's a better way to put it, Skylar. And I needed that correction, which is true from that standpoint. The thing is that we've made a class with a single cylinder 250cc motorcycle that puts out like about 45 horsepower. It's all even. In right this year, it is very even. Whether it's a KTM or a Honda, they're both just about equal to each other. And it comes down to the rider making those decisions. And Matt Oxley was talking about this with the whole, you know, zipper gate with Quartararo and everything, that look, the real problem is these guys in Moto3. And what we really need to do is kind of change the bikes from being 250s to maybe 350s or 450s so that they got to go faster, so they don't carry the corner speed, so that they've got the ability to break away from each other. And the thing of it is, we really, you know, remember back when you had the 125s and you had the two strokes, right? You had a full-on factory 125. And then you had the A-kit production bikes, right? Mm-hmm. That you could buy. And then there was a B-kit bike too, right? And the B-kit bike was nowhere near as fast as the A-kit bike. And the A-kit bike wasn't even anywhere close to where the factory bike were, right? So you had the three, what was it back in the day? Help me out here, but like maybe the four or the five factory 125s out front. Then you had another little battle of about five teams that had the A-kit bikes, you know? And then you had another battle that was like everybody on the B-kit bikes. And so Matt Oxley is suggesting that maybe we do something like that again, and we break up the pack. Mm. And I think he's got a point here that you need to give these guys some more power, right?
But the problem with that is now you're going to the have and have nots, and now you're predicting the race before it even happens when you're doing something like that.
Agreed. But if we went to more power, if we said, okay, you build a bike that's 450 cc's, because KTM has a 450 motocrosser, Honda's got a 450 motocrosser. These guys could build, they could easily put a 450 motor into these things. The CEV and all the other feeder series all have a Moto3 class, right? So these kids have been riding sort of on the same bike, albeit that the World Championship spec tuned bikes are definitely of a higher level than what you have in the CEV or the Red Bull rookies, or, you know, take your pick, name a series that runs these bikes. But the fact is that if you put them on a bike with a little bit more horsepower, they're going to be just that little harder to ride. So it's going to basically thin it out a little bit until everyone figures out how to ride it. But if you have it to where nobody is good, or that nobody's been riding on a 450 until they get to the World Championship level, it's going to take some of the guys who are new a year or so to actually ride and ride fast at the front. So you're going to have less people at the front. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's a potential, right? There's no good solution to any of this. It's just going to be what it's going to be. But somehow I'm just sitting around like, I'm watching a NASCAR race here in the States, like waiting for the big one. And there's going to be a big one at some point. I mean, I think it's inevitable, and, you know, I just hope it just doesn't happen. Anyway, rant over, people. Moving on. Let's wrap this up.
Yeah. We'll get into the championship standings. So that leads to Pedro Acosta. He's still
got
a
mask. Did we ever figure out who won yet?
Oh, did we not even do that yet? I thought we got through.
Because I was talking about Pedro having track limits, and then I went off on the insanity of...
Let's get on to the results, because we got to get the heck out of here.
Yeah, so basically, it was all crazy. The last lap, it was all over the place. They actually had Masia drop back one place for track limits warning. So Garcia wins, Alcoba... It's Garcia wins at the end, then Alcoba, then Anchu, and then you had Masia, Binder, Rodrigo, Acosta, Antonelli, Toba, Nepa, Fieri.
I want to ask you a question. This actually crossed my mind because you've actually raced. I have not. Dennis Anchu gets his first podium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Courtesy of Masia running
track
wide
limits,
penalty.
Yeah. Yep.
Now, as a racer, Jim, do you celebrate as hard as they did for a position that was given to you?
No.
Okay. I looked at it and I thought it was a bit much. Like tears, and then this whole set. It's like, dude, you didn't cross the line in third. Yeah, I mean,
you didn't.
I know you got to be there. It's like someone falling off in front of you, but I don't know, man. That just felt weird.
Yeah. I mean, I remember winning a Wira GTU race, you know, 20 laps. And the reason I won is because the two guys in front of me crashed. It was that simple, you know, and I just took the checkered flag and rode in. And, you know, I kind of looked at my, you know, looked at my mom, my dad, and it's like, well, you did good. I'm like, yeah. I said, we got lucky. And dad's like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you didn't, like, I felt better about having, you know, podiums or seconds in the super sport class than I did about winning that race, because I didn't really win it. I mean, I was going to finish third in that race, but the two guys in front of me decided to fall off. I mean, granted, a world championship might be different, but that was a bit of celebration that I just didn't understand. Mm-hmm. And that's how it is. Yep. So, you know, he's entitled. I mean, hey, yeah. If that's your thing, then, you know, by all means.
I just wanted to ask a racer, because I'm, you know, I'm not in that mindset. And I was like, is that normal? But I don't know. To each their own.
Everybody's different.
Right.
But I wouldn't have been like that. I'd have been happy because I got to the podium, but I wouldn't have been.
Because what happens when you get it for real, you have to celebrate even harder. And who knows, maybe we'll see him do a backflip off the tires like Zarco and do some crazy dance. I don't know. Maybe that kid's got unlimited amounts of celebration in him. We just haven't seen the best yet.
Yes. But with the championship standings, Acosta's still in command. He's got 120 points. Garcia moves into second on 181. Masi is there for 72. Fanati, then Darren Binder, Sasaki, Antonelli, Rodrigo, Mino, and Foggia. It is truly Acosta's championship to lose. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens at Sachsenring, because it's a place where we don't have to worry about the draft in Moto 2.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're going to see Acosta start about 13th or 14th, go blowing through the pack, and I think he's going to win this one walking away. But, no, stranger things have happened, just like zippers coming undone on all others. I mean,
that's right.
Who's writing the script? Right.
Hey, you don't have to wait long. We're going to get that race here very soon, coming up this weekend. That's right. We can enjoy ourselves a little bit more MotoGP action. Now let's go ahead and we'll go ahead and close it out here, Jim. Don't forget, folks, you can email us at motopod@motopodcast.com. We're on the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/motopod. That's the Motopod fan page. And, of course, we're on Twitter @moto_pod. I can be found on Twitter and Instagram @SkylarV28. Jim, where can people find you?
Instagram and Twitter @MotoRGV.
Perfect. All righty, folks. Well, that's it. We try to keep it to an hour. Me and Jim have busy lives right now. We got to get going. And plus, we would just be rambling anyway. So until next week, everyone out there, enjoy the races this weekend. Enjoy the weather. And we will catch you very soon.